racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Don't miss a second of thrilling live racing from Aqueduct this fall on America's Day at the Races on Fox Sports. Watch Maggie Wolfendale, Andy Serling, and the entire All-Star cast bring you the best of fall racing live from Aqueduct. For full TV listings, visit NYRA.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
To At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
One hand clenched into a fist, the other cutting through the mist. When it rises past your face, where angels do not know you. The shimmering of distant lights reminds you of a different life.
Races, bottom of hour two, and the ideas are rolling in. I'll put these on Twitter. I may not have a chance to do it until I get home from Vermont, but we've got Mellencamp, John Cougar Mellencamp, being floated, and as it happens, that girl I mentioned, Kathy Evans. Mellencamp played at her, I think at her either her high school graduation or maybe when she was at IU, and because I we dated, I don't know, 82, 83. I got to Cincinnati in 82, and I got immediately immersed into Indiana culture because we would go to her dad was with Cummins, the engine company, and we would go to Columbus, Indiana, which is where she grew up. And Columbus is an interesting town, actually. The town, for those that are into architecture, Columbus was built, or there was projects in Columbus that have a there was a almost like an architectural design experiment in Columbus, Indiana. I forget the details of that. Now I got to look that up. But anyway, so we used to go, and I started to tell you that's the story about my breaking away story, my experience. We went to Bloomington to see a football game, to see Ohio State destroy Indiana. This is the early 80s, and she took me. There's a famous little ice cream parlor called the Penguin. I think it's called the Penguin, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember we were in line, and I said to her, I said, can you point out point out cutters to me. And she's like, whacked me. She goes, don't say that. They get really, you know, the local kids get real insulted. It was very funny. But, I mean, it you know, breaking away was, you know, it had to be pretty wild to live, you know, to be from Bloomington and have you know, that up on the big screen. It's one of my favorite. And the movie is held up really well. Paul Dooley as the father is just tremendous. And of course you get a teenage Dennis Quaid and Jackie Earle Haley. That's great. It's just fab. And Daniel Stern too, right? If you've never seen Breaking Away. Bill Downs, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I don't know if you caught up on the conversation we had yesterday with Eric Ahlstrom, and we're kind of celebrating the whole season, and Eric let us know that, you know, there's going to be a whole new series of stake names, and so we started to float ideas for, you know, for new names for some of the stakes. And Eric made the mistake of saying we could have maybe a contest on the show for to name a stake at Indiana. So we're gonna have a lot of fun. There's gonna be I guarantee you some really fun Indiana themed suggestions.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what comes out of that. That's certainly interesting. Yeah.
Well, I started to lay them out. We've got Mellencamp. We've got a Jim Neighbors suggestion. Although I think part of what Eric is trying to do is sort of refresh the names, and because I said to him, I said, you can't rename the AJ Foyt, and he said everything is on the table. So I guess what started this was he said to Rachel, why do we have a race named after Florence Henderson? And you know, she's from Dale, Indiana, so I assumed that you know, at some point along the way, and of course the Gus Grissom and so forth, and then there's the one named after the woman, the family that owns the Speedway, Slocum. Yes.
That's Mary Holman. But
Holman. Good job. Yes.
Yeah. And there's another one, Francis Slocum. And so, okay. Well, we'll see what comes out of it. I'm not opposed to it, though I know much about it. But just hearing about it for the first time. But if you want a fresh, you know, it's not like this is. This is the deep rooted in some, you know, ancient history or something like that. That would be, you know, sacrilegious of changing the name. But we'll see what comes out of it.
All right. Well, and I said I'd have to bring it up, but you're not a native. You're not Indiana native. So we're gonna come up with a few things. I mean, I've had my share. When I lived in Cincinnati and worked and would come over quite a bit. The first suggestion to me was Shapiro's. I thought a steak named after, you know, one of the great delis of the Midwest, Shapiro's, would be appropriate. So that's the way my thinking goes.
Well, there's that restaurant downtown that has the famous shrimp cocktail sauce or whatever.
Ooh.
A steakhouse downtown, yeah, that might be one.
Ooh, all right, now you're talking. All right, and
yeah.
we could pull out some great Pacers from the past. Market Square, they don't call it Market Square Arena anymore.
No, it's Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Even though I don't know if the sponsorship is going to stay that way long term, but Bankers Life Fieldhouse downtown. Yeah, it used to be called Market Square Arena. It's just a little bit north of where the current location is at. Yeah,
literally. I mean, Market Square was, I mean, literally the dead center of downtown. I mean, it was like the epicenter of downtown Indianapolis.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know if the parent company Caesars is sponsoring the Pacers or anything like that, or you know, with sports betting and all that in Indiana, it's almost like political commercials. It's you can't get through like a 3-minute set without seeing a sportsbook commercial. So maybe I don't know. Yeah, something with the Pacers or you know, a Slick Leonard or Reggie Miller. Those are the two
now you're
most
talking.
Famous, I think. Yeah,
there
those
you
are
go.
The most famous Pacers.
The Reggie Miller. That's we could get Spike Lee to come and give out the trophy, or have the two of them jawing at each other. That's a little inside. That takes you down to his trips into New York, the Madison Square Garden. Bill, it's been so much fun this year. I this whole season, and it's been remarkable. I mean, I saw yesterday another $2.5 million in handle yesterday. It's really been a spectacular season from your vantage point, calling the races and handicapping. Some thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. I mean, you can't say enough about a couple things. One of which, you know, was a decision that was made before Eric came on after the passing of John Schuster, where we made a decision to move the pick five from the first race to the last five races on the card, and that has been an absolute home run because, you know, we've had some six-figure pick five pools without even a carryover. And that, you know, if you were to say that going into the year, you'd be ecstatic. And the other thing we did, and this is with Eric and what he did, because he adapted to what was going on with the, you know, the coronavirus, the pandemic and all that, is moving our race dates. Instead of running on Friday afternoon and Saturday evening, we decided to go all in on the weekday and ran all of our cards for the most part, except, you know, for the quarter horse days and whatnot, which we also adapted to. But we went for the Monday through Thursday daytime schedule, and it looks like unless something changes last second, I think that's going to be the schedule going forward in 2021, the Monday through Thursday. It might be a slight tweak. I don't. Yeah, we'll wait till it gets announced. But it's going to be a very similar schedule. It'll be a couple of Saturdays that will run thoroughbred wise, but they'll be around the holidays, and that'll be more towards getting people back to the racetrack. You know, we're going to have a little more fun, if you will. Some of the stuff you've seen at other racetracks, the, you know, the camels, the ostriches, all that stuff, the wiener dogs. We'll do that, and we'll center that around on the days that we might run those holiday Saturdays, whatnot. But that's at least the plan going forward. But the handle's been off the chart in terms of Mondays and Thursdays. And, that was something that Eric decided to switch on the fly. And, you know, he was like, if it stinks, we'll find somewhere else to run during the week. But it's been a home run.
Well, the getting familiar with, you know, the riders and the trainers and, you know, the regularity with which, you know, a lot of the horses, you know, that we've seen them, it's made the handicapping, you know, for those that have waded into, you know, playing Indiana on a regular basis this season, it really has helped. And you know, all you have to do is look at these last couple of cards today, tomorrow, and Thursday, and, you know, you see a number of the, you know, the two stakes today, for instance. We've got the two-year-olds going long for the first time in a stake setting with the Miss Indiana and the Indiana Futurity. You know, and here's Hungarian Princess, who you and I have talked about, you know, virtually every start of her career. And on the boys' side, Dillsboro Devil and so forth. I mean, these are horses that we've watched develop as the season's gone on. It's made it, to me, it's made it very approachable. And having hit, you know, a couple of the pick fives, and really, it's been really worth investing the time and effort. And so we're going to try to close things out the next few days. And of course, one of the real other revelations, you know, for those that hadn't ever followed the action and heard Bill elucidate opinions. I mean, Bill's view of races is really strong, and we've done really well together, Bill. I don't know if it's because our approaches either mesh or are different, but we love going over the races with you. So let's look at today's pick five, which starts in the sixth.
Okay, race number six. Yeah, we are off the turf today, by the way. I don't know if that's going to affect it. I know with the sunlight going down, we have lights, they don't go on the turf course, so that's why you always see that in this time of year, whenever we do run on the turf, those races are generally in the first half of the card, and I don't think it does affect anything with this pick five, but we are off the turf today in case you're looking at some of the races earlier. But we got 11 races today. Sometimes I have to double check because some days it's 12, some days it's 11, and then some days it's two quarter horse races and whatnot. But race six, maiden claiming race, bottom level. And, Bill Morey's brought in some horses the last week or so here at Indiana Grand. And Smiling Grace is interesting. First time on synthetic, dropping down in claiming price, had some speed, which will make her dangerous in here. Outside Diamond Dawn, I thought, is intriguing because Joe Davis, when he drops his horses into maiden claiming races for the first time, he does a pretty good number. And last time out, made a big middle move and then faded badly, but that was a turf route. And now we're in a maiden special weight race. Now we're in a dirt sprint in a lower level maiden claiming race. I can use her as well. And then Izzy B improved dramatically with the addition of Blinkers last time out, but that was a bottom level maiden claiming race. And this is a little bit of a step up in class, even though it doesn't seem like it. She's got a big shot as well, since she's got some established form in her last race, where the other two, you're kind of projecting with the class drop, surface switches, distance changes, and whatnot, and what they're going to do. But those are probably the contenders in race six.
I agreed. The five and the eight might be enough to get you through with a group of $7,500 fillies looking to graduate. Second leg is a 10,000 non-2 going three quarters as well, and you got some interesting activity here. You got some turf to dirt. You've got a first off the claim for Marvin Johnson, who took one off Phil Sims for 10 running back. Got state bred going into open company, so there's some karma moves to consider in here. We've got Kim Hammond and Sammy Bermudez, a combination that always attracts my attention. What are we doing in the seventh?
Well, there's a lot of horses coming out of a key race. That's a race, a common race, not a key race. Common race, November 2nd. Second, third, fourth, and sixth all come out of that race. And they all got angles. And this is just a race where probably if I'm putting together a pick five ticket, this is the race I'm probably going the deepest in. You mentioned Marvin Johnson first off the claim, final delivery. Has speed and is drawn a little bit to the outside of a couple other one of the other speed horses, my man Beckett. I like that as well because I don't want necessarily to be on the rail up the back stretch in these dirt sprints. Rivers of Life, I thought, might be worth a look. Also got speed drawn to the outside of the my man Beckett in final delivery. And, the Churchill form's got to be respected, even in these lower-level condition claiming races. I kind of made him my top choice in the race. And like I said, this is a race I don't have my strongest opinion on. I would be higher on Arabian Story. He jammed up the inside, turning for home on November 2nd. He was the one who finished the best in the race of that common race. But he's got the rail once again. If he had the outside, I'd probably make him my top choice. But it's just in these dirt sprints, you can just take a look at the stats. The one post is the lowest percentage. And they win every now and then, but a lot of times there'll be races where there's only like six horses or something like that. So I tend to not pick horses on top with the rail, even though when they do win, you've got to give them extra credit, if you will, next time out. So just a race where I'm spreading all over the place in race seven.
Yeah, feels like my man Beckett, 3-1 for Paul Holtis, feels like the horse to beat. And I agree about Rivers of Light for Felipe Salas. I'll tell you the horse at a price that, and you mentioned, you know, Churchill form and you know, then coming back to Indiana. Bourbon Trail caught my eye a little bit, 8-1, and Robert Clark is winless on the year. He's only he only started 18 horses, so he's only feels like he's only got a couple of horses. Bourbon Trail is one of them. He attracts Deshaun Parker to ride.
Yeah. Yeah,
that says that, you know, with the meet ending and 0-18 on the year, I this is a horse that Clark owns as well. I think Robert Clark wants to win today, and I can't leave Bourbon Trail off my ticket.
Yeah, you can make a case for him. Two things: Deshaun's trying to clinch the leading jockey's title. I still think he's at 5 going into today. Fernando de la Cruz is in second. The other thing about Bourbon Trail, two bad starts in a row, and I hate when that starts to creep up, because I really have to watch it again, both the head-ons, and see what happened at the start to see if it was his fault or if it was someone else's fault. But it looks like it was his fault both times, just reading the trouble lines. But yeah, he fits as well. So like I said, I'm spreading. I'd probably be at least 5 deep in here.
The third leg is the first of the two stakes I mentioned, the two-year-old opportunities going long. And Miss Indiana, mile and 70 yards, and then the Indiana Futurity, big full fields in here, and some horses that we've discussed, including Hungarian Princess. And we got aboard the Kim Hammond, Sammy Bermudez train with this filly right back at the beginning of her career when she won and paid a nice $20. So Hungarian Princess, 3-4 for Swifty Farms, and 7-5 on your morning line.
Yep, 3-3 against Indiana Breds and Hungarian Princess. The big question mark with her is going out of ground for the first time. And, you know, my Pataki kid out of a Stormy Atlantic mare, post isn't bad. So that's something in her corner there. But there's a couple in here that one of which that has shown already shown ability going around the ground. The other one is a big price or a bigger price. How about that? The one that has established form is Timeless Glory for Tony Grant. It's improved dramatically. First time going around the ground. Yes, it was just a field of four, but she just showed that she's, you know, learning. You know, Granite's fillies, they just tend to take a little bit to, you know, either they run great first time out or they just tend to take a little bit of time. And Timeless Glory popped last time out at a very low price and got a pretty big number as well. So I made her second choice in the line. But Russian Influence is the one that has a price that I'm very interested in. Once again, trained by Tony Granitz. And, you know, ran third behind Hungarian Princess in the City of Anderson Stakes. But two things. Blinkers off, that's A. Now, that's not necessarily a Granitz go-to move, but look at the breeding. Buy Into Mischief out of Fuzaichi Pegasus Mares screams to me, especially for an Indiana bred, no problem with a two-turn. So I think I'm projecting some improvement with Russian Influence. I'm going to need it because, she's lost to Hungarian Princess in the past, but that was at a sprint distance, and this is a mile 70 yards. So, this is just a race with a lot of interesting young runners who have shown ability, and now they get their chance to show if they can match up with the division leader in Hungarian Princess. And like I said, Hungarian Princess has to prove it around two turns. And that's something that my late father used to tell me all the time. Anytime you're doing something for the first time and you're taking a low price on a horse, there's reason for concern there. And I'll try and beat Hungarian Princess. I don't know if I'll throw her out by any means, but I'm going to be using Russian Influence and Timeless Glory for sure on my pick five.
Interesting. There's really not. Other than Timeless Glory, for instance, there's really not a lot of two-turn experience. The other Granites, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, but that's it. I suppose the Lauer Runaway and Hyde Filly, Tuck Your Tail and Run, has been around. In fact, they debuted her going long, and she's a maiden actually in here, but she's had four board hits. But she just, I don't know, she's 30-1 if you're looking for a giant price. I thought the Bernie Flint, even though her best race came on the grass, that was 7.5 furlongs. So, there's some two-turn experience. Amazing Gal with Bowen, 11, going to be 20-1. But I've been a Hungarian Princess fan from word go. So depends on the size of your ticket. If you're looking for a single, she might be it. You go to the boys' race, and feels like Hard Luck Justice and Manuelito. They feel like the two. To me, that you want. Manuelito's a price, and Hard Luck Justice 7-2. Dillsborough Devil, I mentioned earlier. I suppose Sudden Shift for Dr. Gorham. It's a nice race, actually.
Yeah, talk about Dillsborough Devil first. He overcame some trouble in his debut, and he won at 5-2, and he defeated Sudden Shift in that race, and then came back in the Crown Ambassador, was a bit more professional, and he was asked in the stretch, but he did what he needed to do, and he won. But now he's going around the ground. On top of that, he's out there in post number 11, and breeding wise, Skylord out of a Lord Carson mare, so does tilt a little towards the sprinting. The one I like the most in here is Sudden Shift. For Bob Gorham, Sean Parker gets aboard for the first time. Alvin Jimenez, I think, is at Churchill now, and it's kind of, once you leave, you really can't come back to the jockey colony at Indiana Grain. You got to stay out 2 weeks. So Sudden Shift has a new jockey and Deshaun Parker. And just, I had to reacquaint myself. I remember lots of stuff during races, but watching the race back, he was not really asked very much at all in the last furlong. And it just seemed like, he really is going to enjoy being a router. And, the Unbridled Express horses, we talk about that. We've talked about that all year long. They're good on the turf, and a lot of the turf races are longer races, and so they seem to like going long as well. And eventually, I'm sure we'll see Sudden Shift in a turf race next season. But he's the one I like the most in the race. But there's a lot of interesting horses in here. Hard Luck Justice just won 7 days ago,
yep.
And he beat Private Union. Private Union was like a 3-5 favorite, and Hard Luck Justice just came an upper stretch and just went right on by him. And Private Union was well clear for second, and that was a. I want to say an iPod. I don't want to go too overboard, superlative wise, but that was a much better than average maiden race. Let's put it that way. And Hard Luck Justice just ran right on by the huge favorite, Private Union, in that spot. Fleester kind of impressed me way back in late September, but he has not raced since. He's going around the ground for the first time. He's also trained by Bob Gorham, who's got multiple horses in this race. And then after that, there's a lot of horses that are all right. But for me, it's my top pick is Sudden Shift in that Indiana Futurity.
Yeah, Sudden Shift, absolutely. And mentioned Hard Luck Justice. After that, some nibblers, depending on how much you can afford. And, managing your ticket is going to be key, because you get to this nightcap bill. Holy cow. State bred, $7,500 claimers. They're going to go a mile. And, you know, these are all pretty much from, you know, five to 7,500 types. And frankly, there's a lot of horses that are in nice form. This is a crazily competitive group.
Yeah, it is. You know, Rooster I made as the tepid 3-1 favorite in this race, won lower condition claiming race last time out November 9th. It was just nice to see Rooster finally get a win because, you know, he had a pretty good 2019. And one of the probably the highlight of his 2019 was when he won, you know, one of those very, very restrictive stakes races, not just like Indiana, it's like a sale type of stakes race. But that was the last time that Rooster went around a ground at today's distance of 1 mile, and he won the race. So now he's in back in form, and he's stretching back out to a distance where he's 1-for-1. So I don't know how deep you want to go, but you just have to use Rooster. I don't see how you throw him out by any means. But there's others in here, obviously. Where Are We Going for Lauer is dropping from 16 down to 7.5, and faced quite a bit better in his last start. The likes of Hugo Boy, who's very, very strong in these middle-level type of races, either they're claiming or lower-level optional claiming races. So that was, and that was actually a better performance than what we've seen the 2 and 3 starts ago. So he might be, you know, coming on an uptick here late in the season. I can make a case for him. Close the case. You know, I think he's better going around a ground. I don't know if he can beat this group, but I know he's. I do know he's better going around a ground. At least I think he is than he is sprinting, and you know, maybe with the proper trip for him. And after that, your guess is as good as mine. There's a lot of different ways you can go. You know, Wicked Slider, I think, is better on an off track, and that's the outside horse, the 10. I don't think he's that good on a dry track, so I kind of wouldn't be looking at him. Bonky, you know, he seems good for about one win a year, and he's had it. It doesn't show me anything. So for me, it's Rooster, Where Are We Going. But, you know, I'd be interested to hear if you got any other thoughts on that race.
I you know, the two of them, of course, you know, coming out of that that race at the beginning of the month, Rooster, you know, winning by what, a couple of lengths. So I completely agree there with the 7 and the 8. A couple that have records, Bill, that can be problematic in a race like this. Conquest Stormy for Randy Klopp and Kendall Sterrett.
Yeah, I mean, if you just throw out the last race,
exactly, and you know,
if you do that, yeah, and then all of a sudden you're like, wow, 15-1. This looks quite juicy. So, you know, just doing the line, I have to, you know, I have to make them double.
No, that's the right price. That's the right price.
So,
no doubt.
But
no
just
doubt.
For a handicapper's perspective, if you eliminate that race, he certainly fits against this group. So he might be the one to throw in there besides the 7 and 8.
And while we're on the topic of Randy Klopp, he's got the Dark Flatter, the Flatter gelding down inside, 6-1, coming off of a win. And it's funny, Gary Patrick's horse has got to be mentioned, Rushed, who Rooster also, you know, just beat in that November 9th race. This is a horse, though, hasn't won in ages. And you mentioned, you know, the infrequency, and this is just seems like a wind shy horse at this point. So these are problematic, though, when you look at a group like this. You leave a horse like that. At the least, he's a C, but he's got plenty of races. The last two are both races that actually fit. I mean, he's stretching back out. I thought that this was just a maniacal group. Wicked Slider on the outside as well for Marvin Johnson, 8-1. I think you need as much coverage as you can afford. I thought this was a very tough way to end the sequence.
Yeah, and so a couple things that while you were talking, one thing I want to mention that With the races coming off the turf today, there's a horse that is entered tomorrow at Indiana Grand at one of our stakes races and is one of the favorites, and he might run in the allowance optional claiming race today because it's a sprint. We're talking about Crunch, and you know the early scratches, Crunch, is going to be running in our race today and not in the race tomorrow. And that was
interesting.
Yeah, so I
in
thought
the fifth.
Yeah. So he's in the Francis Slocum tomorrow, the eighth race, and I made him second choice in the morning line because he's not as proficient going around the ground, and the race is just it's loaded from top to bottom, and he would go off at I made him 3-5 in the race today. So if he runs, obviously he's not going to run in back to back days. That would be ridiculous, especially this time. You don't do that anymore. I know they do. They have quick turnarounds in Australia, but going from a sprint to a route, that's not going to happen. So that would change things a whole bit. Just in case you're looking at the PPs on Wednesday and you didn't see that Crunch was running potentially today, that kind of changes the whole dynamic of that race.
I appreciate it. And with that, Bill, best of luck today. We'll come back and go after that Wednesday slate as well, the Too Much Coffee and the Francis Slocum. The race is tomorrow. And if you're looking ahead, the sequence is the 7th through the 11th tomorrow for the pick 5. And I'll be writing it. I can't write this one up because I'm on my way to Vermont, but we will certainly write up tomorrow's. And Bill, I appreciate it, and we'll talk again tomorrow morning.
All right, sounds good.
Bill Downs, everybody. Bill Downs won, and Bill and Rachel and Nancy will have all the action for you. Andy Serling's going to have the action for you here in New York, and we'll get Andy on board. Case, if you would, get a hold of Andy. Did you ever hear back from, you never heard back from Chris, huh? From Clement? Huh. All right. Somehow, Christophe Clement slipped through the cracks. All right. Bob Hutton will join us after Andy, and we'll get the details on the situation at Arizona. And we're also, not today, but reached out and hope to get some details tomorrow from the FanDuel people regarding Fairmount. And the plan down in East St. Louis. How about that? Collinsville. I shouldn't say East St. Louis, right? It's Collinsville, I think. Right? Collinsville. I'm pretty sure. Indiana stake names continue to pour in. A couple of good ones from our friend Leslie Knopf. She's suggesting David Letterman. Right? Absolutely. The David Letterman, and maybe the Jane Pauley, not so bad either. Good suggestion. So we'll keep on the Indiana front. Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
I want to know what the Indiana tie is in the show.
All right, the Indiana tie-in yesterday, Eric Hallstrom, we were going through the season, and he said, we're going to rework all the stake names. And it's elicited all kinds of interesting suggestions already, personalities from Indiana. And I came up with Breaking Away. We could have the Breaking Away.
Breaking Away is a very great movie.
I was telling everybody, if they haven't seen it, they got to rectify that as soon as possible.
I always like when Daniel Stern says to his friend, "My dad likes it when I fail, so we can have that father-son talk." Breaking Away is a great movie. I feel like Breaking Away, whatever year it was, which early 80s, I think it was a year where a bunch of good movies were nominated for the Oscar. What year were the nominees for that year?
In 79, actually. I just pulled it out. It was 79. But I knew I was in college because when I've told everybody when I graduated and moved to Cincinnati, I dated a girl from IU, and you know, got to go to Bloomington, and you know, my whole head was filled with every scene from Breaking Away.
Refund.
Paul Dooley is so great.
Yeah, I agree.
The father. Oh my God, he's great, and he's also great as Wimpy in Popeye, in Altman's Popeye.
Peter Yates, right? I feel like Peter Yates made Breaking Away.
Absolutely, Peter Yates. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Dennis Quaid, probably one of, if not Dennis Quaid's first movie, it's got to be right there, right?
It's got to be early on. Yeah. What about Jackie Earle Haley?
Yeah. Well, it was in Bad News Bears.
Well, sure, but I mean, this was—I mean, he's what they call an actor's actor.
Yeah. He'll never outgrow Kelly Leach.
No.
Kelly Leach, excuse me.
Yes. it is. You know who else? I'm just pulling up now that we're doing this. John Ashton, who plays Dennis Quaid's brother, remember, is a security guard or a cop. He's a terrific actor.
Daniel Stern's in a lot of stuff.
Oh, of course, Daniel Stern. But John Ashton is a guy.
Has a great role in Hahn and Her Sisters, right? As the rock star who's buying the painting from Max von Sydow that goes to this couch.
Boy, I've got to go. You know what? It's been literally. I've only ever seen it the one time, Andy.
Really?
Yep.
There's so many great things in that.
Yep. I only saw it the one time in the theater.
That's great. That's a good movie. Anyhow.
That's what's gone on with the Indiana with the Indiana tie-in that's got us laughing. I'm going to throw you one more in here, by the way, that I'd forgotten, I didn't realize was in it. Amy Wright is in it.
Amy Wright?
Yeah.
I don't know who she is.
Oh, yes, you do. Sure you do. She was in Schenectady, she was in... she's been in a few different things. You would recognize her if you...
I woke up in the middle of the night, and Desperate Seeking Susan was on HBO. So I watched that. I hadn't seen in years. There's a lot of really good people in that movie. Remember, did you realize John Turturro's in that movie?
I
he's the MC.
No.
He's the MC at the Magic place, you know, the place in the Lower East Side.
Okay.
Is that Peter Stormare who plays the bad guy? It's just a funny movie. It's also a funny New York movie. I mean, Aiden works in the Bleecker Street Cinema. I mean, Bleecker Street Cinema has been gone forever. I'm trying to think. There's so much good stuff in that movie. Stephen Wright plays the dead.
That, yes.
Boyfriend. He's great.
What was the... There's a companion, not that they're related, but there was a companion movie, Andy, with Desperately Seeking Susan, where... Where somebody who I'm trying to remember who it is.
Are you
now,
thinking of the first movie by Susan Seidelman, Smithereens?
No, but boy, I haven't seen that in forever. But where it's a night out in New York movie.
No, it's not a companion movie, but it's actually on HBO on demand now. After Hours.
Thank you.
A lot of great people in that movie. Speaking of Rissa and Arquette. She's in that. And
there you
Cheech
go.
Cheech and Chong are in that. Linda Fiorentino's in that. John Hurt is in that. A lot of really good people. Griffin Dunn, of course. But I think After Hours is on like HBO On Demand right now. I feel like it is.
That is exactly what I was thinking of. Thank you.
That's a little-known Scorsese movie.
That's a crazy movie.
It's come out at some more time, though. I think you're right.
Yeah, I associate them together for whatever reason. Desperately Seeking Susan is fun, is a lot of fun. You know what would be a good, you know what would be a good now and then companion to Desperately Seeking Susan? That movie from just a year ago or so with Charlize Theron, where she's hallucinating a young companion. It's basically her as a young girl. You know, she's just had the baby.
You know, I really need to bulk up on my Charlize Theron.
Oh, she's terrific. Know? How do you not love Charlize Theron?
I didn't like her. Oh, I know the movie you're talking about. I tried to watch it. I didn't really like it. Ron Livingston's in it, right?
Like yes, husband. As the husband. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I just didn't.
It's a one name. It's a one. It's the wife's name, or the babysitter. The babysitter, or you know.
Yeah,
the,
I know. I know who you're talking about. I know exactly who you're talking about. I don't know how exactly that relates to Desperately Seeking Susan, but okay.
It does. It sort of does.
Like horses are related because they have four legs and many tails.
why are you like that? I'm going to tell you one other Amy Wright role that you'll appreciate from a highly underappreciated film. She was the love interest in Inside Moves. You remember the
Inside Moves, John Savage?
Yes, and David Morse as the basketball player. Jerry, Rory.
I like David Morse. It's great.
It's a fabulous picture.
David Morse is in a great, nasty cop movie. Not Internal Affairs. It's in New Orleans.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that.
Richard Gere is in it.
Yes. Sense? Yes, it does. Good for you.
Not Internal Affairs, the other one.
Well, the original Internal Affairs is very good with Richard Gere.
Yes, I agree. David Morse is also great in The Crossing Guard, which is one of the movies Sean Penn.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that great scene in the trailer with him and Jack Nicholson.
Well, and of course, David Morse as the character in St. Elsewhere that the sky literally falls on every week.
Dumped in
Brown. Right? There's never been a character on television more put upon than him.
Yeah. I walked by him not long ago around Columbus Circle. Should have said something to him.
Nice.
I try to rarely bother celebrities. But they're usually pretty nice.
But they constantly bother you. That's the weird thing.
No, they don't. Charles Oakley is the only celebrity I totally regret in life not talking to when he was standing next to me for a while once.
I'm trying to think if I can make the one that I only kind of nodded to was Joe Mantegna at the Fairmont in Chicago.
Love Joe Mantegna. It's great. House of Games?
House of Games.
Anybody that's listened to the show that's never seen House of Games should immediately find where they can stream it and watch it.
Yeah.
It's truly one of the all-time great movies.
It is.
I think it's Mamet's first movie, right?
I would say yes. It might not have been his first screenplay, but yes.
No.
I'm going to say.
It's not his first screenplay. He'd already have plenty of plays.
Right. Well, I mean, first thing that he was, closely associated with.
I think the only thing I saw Mantegna on stage, I saw him in the original Speed the Plow with Ron Silver and Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
Way back. But I didn't see Glengarry Glen Ross originally or even when they redid it. I saw the movie. I never saw it in the theater.
House of Games was 87.
Yeah. Probably the first movie he directed, though I'm not sure. He directed Spanish Prisoner.
Did he direct it? I know he wrote it. I don't know if he directed it.
Have to look. Good movie.
It's on. It's been on lately a bunch of times.
I know it is. Yeah, it's around.
Yeah.
No, it's a good movie. You know, it's a good movie, Campbell Scott? The one when he's the guy who picks up women and the kid, right? When he's Roger Dodger.
Ooh, you know what? I've not seen.
It's not a bad movie, Roger Dodger. I wonder who directed that.
Well, that, boy,
It is directed by... You know who's in it? Jesse Eisenberg. It's probably like his first movie. The one kid directed. I've never heard of it.
As we bounce around and discuss films, I've got a very good question that you'll appreciate, Andy. Given the passing of Alex Trebek and how pronounced your Jeopardy critiques are of players, explain.
No, critique the betting at the end.
That's what I'm saying.
I couldn't do as well as the worst person on that show. I don't mean them. Their performance of the show. I mean, their betting is just wrong all the time. Last night was good. Anyway, what?
Well, explain. Somebody is asking. I've got a request here. Ask Andy to explain what the proper philosophy should be in that in Final Jeopardy.
Well, if you finish second, it depends on the amount of money that other people have, obviously. But
yes,
if you finish second. If you get it right and you finish second, the only way you can win is if the player in front misses it. If you finish third and you get it right, the only way you can win, is if the two ahead of you. So you have to figure out how to maximize your chances, right? So, for instance, the person in front is always going to have to bet enough to at least double the second person. There are many instances where the second person doesn't have to bet and shouldn't bet or should bet a very minimal amount because the second person should make sure that they're betting enough that they have more money than the leader has when the leader gets it wrong. And you have to assume the leader, you know, if you have 15,000, the leader has 20,000, the leader has to bet 10,001, right? Because
yes.
you bet all your old 15, you've got 30,000.
Right.
The leader has to presume the second person is going to bet their whole amount. They can't put themselves in jeopardy if they don't. So you know that the person in front is going to bet 10,001. So effectively, you know if the leader gets it wrong from his $20,000, he's going to have 9,999. So you can bet up to $5,000. Having said that, it all depends what the third person has. If the third person has $2,000, it doesn't matter. If the third person has $8,000, well, you've got to bet $1,001, right? Because you've got to bet enough that you've had more than double that person. So you've got to weigh the two. Now, the person in third is in an amazing position when they have more than the number that the leader has to bet. You know, leader score minus how much they have to bet because they don't bet at all, right? Because the horse person is in second has to make sure they're betting double. They end up with double what the third person has. So there's a lot of different iterations, and it all depends on the different amounts of money they have. It's actually interesting. The guy who won last night, it didn't matter because he got it right and the other two got it wrong, but he was in second. He actually bet the exact perfect amount, which was rare on that show. It only strikes me as interesting because it's just mathematical permutations, and they're relatively simple. It's just adding, subtracting, and multiplying. I mean, it's not. But it's the one thing on Jeopardy that you can know going in. How do I bet? It's not, you know, this notion that you separate knowledge from intelligence. Okay, but the people on Jeopardy are bright people. The extent of how bright they are is like anything. Everything's a spectrum of, you know, from a low end of dry end, you know. You can have 100 super bright people. That doesn't mean, you know, a person who's the dumbest of that group, but they're still brilliant, you know. It's not, but the one thing they can know going on that show is how to properly bet Final Jeopardy. And the number of people that would have won that lost because they bet wrong. Forget about answering questions. That to me, I mean, to not win the game because you bet wrong at Final Jeopardy is just incredibly disgraceful. You know, you can get questions wrong, you can be out, I mean, mostly it's about being out buzzed, who's best with a buzzer, but forgetting about everything else. You know, you get there, you should have won as it played out, and you bet wrong, well, that you could have avoided. You can't avoid people buzzing in more quickly, or you can't avoid not knowing the categories or getting a question wrong. I mean, obviously people should bet their daily doubles better, and James Holzhauer, the guy who won all the money?
Yeah.
I mean, how did people not? I mean, people have learned. Some people have learned from him to start at the bottom of categories, but a lot of people haven't learned to bet. But the guy who won last night, he won because he got both daily doubles in the second round, and he bet well. Didn't bet as much as he should have, but he bet enough, and that's why he won. Having said that, he won because the leader got an incredibly easy question wrong. And I judge incredibly easy by a question that I know the answer to.
What was your take? Because I've got probably an unpopular opinion on this, but what was your Alex Trebek take?
He's a legend. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things about that job that I don't think you appreciate. The general people may not appreciate. You know, he's got to read every clue every day and be able to pronounce every word and every clue properly.
Sure,
that's not easy.
No.
There's a lot of words in those. Look at those clues on a nightly basis and say to yourself, do I know those words? Do I know the correct pronunciation of those words? I don't know. I think Alex Breck was great. He was perfect for that show. Why? You didn't like him? I'm going to now knock a guy who just died of cancer?
No,
be a high point of the Steve Bick show.
No, I'm not going to knock him. He's a wonderful guy, and he was a big fan of, you know, of equine athletes. No, he. You want to talk about racetrack, and about horses. And
he loved the breeding farm.
He loved. He had that beautiful, beautiful farm over by the castle. Here's the problem I always had with him. I'm, and I put this up the other day when I put my little tribute up on Twitter, where I said, "High rollers, Trebek is the best Trebek." You know, that sort of Tom, he had that sort of Tom Selleck look, you know, from the 80s when he had that, you know, that game, you know, High Rollers, where they rolled dice, and I don't even remember how the game worked.
I vaguely remember that shot.
Well, I remember him from his early game show appearances, and so when he replaced Art Fleming, I thought, you got to be kidding! You're going to replace Art Fleming with this huckster, and you know, granted that transition is so far in history that it's completely forgotten. But at the time, I thought, come on! I mean, Art Fleming, to me, Art Fleming was, you know, from the Hugh Downs school and the Bill Cullen school of hosting. You know, the ultimate polished.
Have you gotten over Jack Parr leaving Tonight Show yet?
Yes, I have. I'm still, okay. I still miss Tom Snyder, actually.
Tom Snyder. I miss Dan Aykroyd's impersonation of Tom Snyder. There's a great Tom Snyder from May of 81 with the Dead and Kesey are on. It's on YouTube. You can find it pretty easily. Great stuff.
81?
Yeah. Yeah, with the Dead playing acoustically in the studio, and Garcia and Lear and Kesey talking to Snyder. It's great.
Wow.
May of 81.
Wow! All right, I'll look. I got to go to Vermont after the show, but
it's May 10th or so. I don't know. It's during the Nassau shows in 81.
Well, I thank Tom Herman for the question about the.
I don't know if I explained it well enough.
No, you explained it great.
Right.
No, you totally did. You totally did. And I came to love Alex Trebek just like everybody else. I actually did some emceeing of College Bowl at Colgate, which was a lot of fun. So I do know what the tale, I do know what the job entails. And if they want to consider me, I'd be interested.
Okay, they'll probably be calling any minute. Somebody said that George Stephanopoulos might be the favorite. Did I read that somewhere or hear that somewhere?
Well, they're going to have to put him on a peach box to get him above the lectern.
Seriously?
Yeah, he's.
Fair point. All right. Let me withdraw that.
That's beneath you, isn't it?
I don't know if I can go forward from here. you got to rescue me here, and let's talk about some performances. And also, have you been playing the cross country pick five?
No, it's very, very difficult for me to clip together plays while I'm on the air, Steve.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's been really a lot of fun.
They've great. No, they've absolutely. And also, there's only two of the 4 days that I actually do the latter part of the Churchill card, so I hadn't handicapped those races. And frankly, I'm handicapping enough races these days. So,
well,
but the payoffs have been great. I mean, I'm foolish for not playing. The payoffs have been great, but I probably would have lost them all.
They've been challenged. Putting the ticket together has been the challenge, and keeping it, you know. Keeping it reasonable, you know, which is always the challenge, but absolutely has been worth attacking. A couple of performances, Andy, from the weekend. Talk about the 2-year-olds for a second, and that Eagle Orb, I thought, ran a nice race, and then there was also the other 2-year-old.
Well, the Albertrani horse, the maiden, the Half a Saddler's Joy, that he ran in the dirt.
Yes.
That one felt like a 77 or 78 buyer.
Yeah, the Dynaghost. Wolfie's Dynaghost.
Yeah, that horse ran a big number.
Well, and winning at 7/8 is always a good sign.
Todd had a first-time start that won in the mud, I feel like, on Friday, the first race that got a big number. Like high
70. That horse got it was recognized, I think, by TDN. I think called it a rising star. The Vancouver.
What by that 40% of the high figure made first time starters get a rising star from TDN?
Give or take, if they're by the right sire.
That's like the seven horses in a race and claim he had the winner afterwards.
hit the WOA.
No, not hit the WOA. Not
hit the WOA.
That's Christophe. That was on Thursday. I think Friday's first race. Todd Lowe, the first year that got a decent figure. Not the hitter Woa didn't run okay. I thought
that horse was okay at the Woa.
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe.
What did you think of Therapist win?
I think if I had to put shocking. Can't believe it. Glad my horse ran nowhere. Glad I didn't play the pick four. I don't know. He's a cool horse. He really is. I mean, he's been an effective horse for a long time. And, and winning that race to feather his cap, because he's not really a particularly strong two-turn horse. He's better, if there were 10-7 furlong turf races a year, and he was allowed to commit fouls in him and not get disqualified, he might go undefeated. But he's really a horse that's so better suited. And I was glad to read that Christophe's thinking of coming back on short rest in that Aqueduct Sprint championship on the turf, because why not? I mean, I don't know that he's run him six in a long time, maybe in the beginning of his career, but I bet him at six before I bet him at a mile. So I that was interesting to see Christophe was running, because I'd mentioned that on the show and said, I guess the only race he could run him in, they're probably too quick to come back, but he's a very cool horse. He really is a hard trying horse. He always runs reasonably well. I mean, it's hard to remember him running a race where he didn't run it reasonably well, Stop had another firster. He had a firster win on Sunday that got a 75 buyer.
That was Harper's in charge.
Yeah. Not surprising, especially once the weather cleared up, that we saw a lot of good maidens in run so far.
Are you the Pletcher in the mud? Are you talking about the state bred Uno?
Yes. That horse got a decent figure, didn't he?
76.
Not bad.
No, nothing wrong at all.
The world on fire, but
yeah, I didn't realize you meant a state bred race though. I was looking open company.
They start with an advantage.
state.
Yes, they do. You know what performance I want to mention? And just because it was weird, and not weird, but I was surprised. David doesn't misfire too often on the morning line.
Surprised about seven times a day, maybe about nine these days. I'm not surprised when I see the betting. Once I see the betting, I know exactly who's going to win every race.
Graded on a curve, Andy, on Saturday mid card that started the Naira Pick Five, not the cross country.
He ended up going off favored,
but he was 6-1 on the morning line.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
No, he wasn't. I don't think so. I think he was 3-1 on the morning line. Because I had a text exchange about this with David because I thought. That I said in the show that I thought that Junkaroo would be a shorter price, and he texted me and he said he thinks that everybody's figured out that that fig from two back in the Colonel Liam race is probably too high. So he said he thinks that Grade will be a shorter price. What day was that? Saturday?
That was Saturday, and I've got it up
right now, Steve. I'm looking it up right now.
Oh, actually, you're right. No, you're right. 3-1.
Yeah. Because I specifically had a conversation. I was talking about it on Talking Horses, and then David texted me.
Okay.
He had Junkaroo 4-1, and he had the winner 3-1. Yes.
Good. All right. So this is a
rare time you were wrong.
Well, no, I thought for
not
sure.
Wrong rarely.
Hold on.
You were wrong rarely.
This is strange.
I'm wrong for a living.
So I'm wondering.
It's okay, Steve. I won't hold it against you. You meant well.
Here's my point. I singled him. To start the pick five. That horse to me jumped off the page.
That was a long way to go for a red board. Wow.
I do my best. See, I don't know.
That red board is now tainted, beyond tainted for a red board. You started out by incorrectly criticizing David's line. The worst red board. I mean, on the internet where there's horrendous red boarding on a daily basis, this might be the worst one I've ever heard. Do you really want to continue with this one?
I guess not. It's going to get worse because now I'm going to complain. I'm going to complain about a ride. All right. Well, in the nightcap. Well, then I got the same question I got to ask you that I asked Richie. The caretaker, Andy, in the nightcap on Saturday.
Honestly, I left and saw that race on the platform waiting for the A-train. I have no idea how the winner won. They're the worst. One at 5-1 that could have been 50-1. I wouldn't use. I noticed the caretaker didn't hit the board. What happened to him?
It was just strange. Lascano kind of wrangled him to the back of the pack and then launched a bid and came wide and late and got beat 2-3 lengths. And I didn't. I was not.
I took an annoying beat. It's an annoying beat when you actually have a smart opinion. And it wasn't that beat because the horse actually got a great ride from Hector Diaz and a very good trip. But I needed 19-1 Royal Collection, race number 8, to get second or win. And got beat in the nose for second. Had the whole stretch to get by. I mean, the only thing annoying was the horse's big price, and the exacta was $70 behind the winner. That was really annoying. That was my Princess Jess horse, the layout horse. That's her foal. That was the first time she got to sprint from the turf, and they've been sprinting her on synthetic and even on dirt, I think, once. And she ran well. She got a good trip. It was a slow pace. That didn't help her, but overall, it wasn't a bad trip. But, that was frustrating. It's frustrating when you're clever at prices and you just narrowly miss, but the game, what are you going to do?
Well, and that we had that a little bit of that discussion about Breeders' Cup too last week, and that seems to happen there.
I think in 2 years when 15 went again, I'm not going to handicap it. Seriously.
I hear you. I hear you. Nick took a swing too. Nick said he thinks it's not a good Breeders' Cup.
It's a bad venue for the Breeders' Cup. And I like Keeneland. I'm not saying it's beat up on them. I'm really not. I like Keeneland. I've spent a lot of time there.
You've gone for years.
Going there, I'm a fan. I really am. And I don't mean this to be, I just don't think it's a good venue because I don't think that turf course holds up at the end of the year. There have been, on both Breeders' Cups, and I've thought about this more and more, and I've talked to other people about it who agree, and not just embittered people like myself, that it's a bad event, that the turf course just doesn't hold up. And an enormous number of horses, and it's Euros and Americans. It's not like the Euros are used to that ground. It's a weird ground. It just doesn't hold up that late in the year. And they had a reasonably good variation this year. I know they had some rain, but then it got to be 70 degrees week of for a few days. I mean, what conditions are they going to have in early November that are going to be beneficial? Yeah. That course just doesn't hold up.
That's fair.
And I'm not, you know, I just, it's the Breeders' Cup, man. You're going to have those races, and they're huge races. You got to be on courses that are better. So obviously that's a, you know, an issue. It's not the only track that's an issue with that right now. You know, unfortunately, the best courses, well, the best courses, I would guess, are Arlington, Woodbine, and us.
Yeah. I mean, on the eastern half of the country.
Yeah, Woodbine has synthetic, so it doesn't really, and so is Arlington. So,
yeah,
so there it is. I mean, I'm not just saying it's us. I don't think anybody would disagree. Those are great courses for races. In the Lyle and the Widener for the Breeders' Cup Mile, what could be more perfect, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The outside posts don't get as buried as they do around two turns.
The one-turn dirt mile.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not in that. I'm not going to sit here and blame the Breeders' Cup for the Breeders' Cup not being at Belmont.
No, that's a weird, complex conversation.
Easily as much on us. I'm not, you know, easily probably more. So I'm not, you know. I don't mean that to be critical in that sense. I'm happy to be critical of them, but not in that sense. I'm just saying that I think it's a great, you know, it's a great racetrack for the races. But, you know, as far as the surface, as far as the, you know, the track. The only thing one thing you could argue fairly is that a mile and a quarter at Belmont is the greatest. You know, that's not the greatest situation.
Well,
I mean,
other
it's
than
okay, tracks like Churchill and Keeneland where it starts top of the stretch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
well, it certainly didn't stop the classic at Belmont, you know, from being one of the, when you think about
they've been great for your stuff classics at Belmont. No,
absolutely,
I agree. You know, I'm trying to be fair. I don't really have an issue with it, but I you know, I can't just criticize every other thing. And you know, I know people don't love that start. It's not a perfect situation. That's all. It's an imperfect situation.
Well, a perfect Andy Serling appearance. It had it all.
Not sure about that, but I'll take it.
It did.
Have a wonderful day. And who's your next guest?
Bob Hutton from Arizona, where Turf Paradise is going to run. And but don't worry, they did manage to come up with a new controversy already. Even though they got the meat set up, so we're going to talk to.
They're involved in vote counting.
No, luckily no. They a little OTB issue that still
I'll
needs
let you
to
talk
be ironed.
About it. See you later.
Andy Serling, everybody, and tomorrow. Andy's not on tomorrow, as Rich Migliori told you. But the America's Day at the Races is, with coverage from Parks and Churchill, and then Andy back on Thursday when Churchill and Aqueduct hook up. As mentioned, Bob Hutton joining us. And while I was at the Breeders' Cup, there were good things happening. And Turf Paradise and the Horsemen ironed out and signed an agreement. And Bob, congratulations to you guys and to Turf Paradise for making this happen.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's like running a marathon. It was really, you know, it took weeks and weeks and weeks to get it done. A lot of negotiation, a lot of, as far as protecting the horsemen of what happened in the past and moving forward just to make sure that there wasn't any situations as far as it would put them in an awkward position as far as their horses are concerned. So as far as that was concerned, yeah, it's good we got it done. That was... the third deal or contract that we negotiated a new one January of 2020, and then we had when the COVID hit in March, we had to renegotiate a settlement agreement, and then we had to do this one that we just got done. And so that was three in a year with Mr. Sims, and Mr. Sims can be a very tough negotiator as far as that's concerned. So it wasn't what I anticipated signing up for, but we got it done, and it's good for the horsemen, it's good for the breeders, it's good for the owners. You know, it's just and the purse structure is going to be better than it's been since I've been at Turf Paradise. So, you know, there's some money to go around, and it's a good thing for the horsemen.
Very nice. Provide a quick snapshot of the details. 84 days, I believe.
Well, we're gonna race 84 days, 5 days a week. We think we can race 5 days a week. If we can't, if we don't have the horse inventory, we'll make adjustments. But as far as that's concerned, we start January 4th. The horsemen can get in to set up their stalls on the 19th of November, which is a couple days away, and
it's
then
Thursday.
I think the horses can come in on the 25th, and they'll start training on December 1st.
Wow. How much commitment, you and I talked when, you know, you were trying to get things ironed out, and one of the imperatives was that, you know, horsemen that, had to make plans for their winter quarters. Did this come in time for, you know, those that wanted to be at Turf Paradise? Did they wait and, you know, are they able to make, you know, the commitment? Do you believe that you've got, you know, the kind of backstretch support you're going to need to fill cards the way you'd like?
I believe we will, Stephen, because I know they're having a couple issues in New Mexico as far as the purse structure,
right,
because
right.
of the casinos have been shut down. I know that some of our horsemen are, you know, they were planning to go to Tampa, or some right now are at Hawthorne. And, you know, a lot of these people have homes here and you know,
right.
10, 15 minutes from the racetrack, and they're raising their families, and they want to see their kids get up and go to school in the morning. And so, you know, it's really a good thing. And a lot of these people that are spread around the country will come back. And I've heard that the stall applications are going very well. And as far as, providing the horse inventory that we're going to need to run 5 days a week. But once again, if we're, you know, not many tracks run, I don't think anybody runs 5 days a week anymore, Steve. So
no.
If we had to make an adjustment to four, that would be all right. My biggest concern is the horsemen have purse money to run for.
Well, absolutely, and so that part of it feels like a big win for everybody involved. And you know, Bob, I suppose, you know, in addition to you know to your group and to you know, Mr. Sims and oh my gosh,
Mr. Francia?
Francia, thank you. I was drawing a blank. Who else? I suppose you got some support from the regulators. Did they help make this happen?
Well, Mr. Casillas with the Department of Gaming and Racing was very instrumental in helping bring the two parties together as far as working out a deal. And for obvious reasons, they want to see racing go. I mean, that's how they support their department downtown. And so, yeah, we got some help from the regulators downtown, and everybody just kind of pulled together. And we try to put the feelings of, distraught or anything else that were created in the past and just kind of put them aside and move forward. I could tell you that, you know, it was the toughest thing about it, Steve, was probably because a lot of the horsemen that are here in town, there was really kind of a division. A lot of people, you know, were calling me saying, don't run. We've had enough of this. And then we had other people that were saying, we don't have anywhere else to go. So it was we were getting it from both sides. So, it was kind of a, you know, you can't please everybody, but the fact of the matter is we're running, and the people that I was really concerned about, Steve, and I think you'd understand this, was, you know, and the breeders in the state, they've said here, we've got a breeders' bill passed where a portion of the money is going to the the breeds to try to create more inventory in the state. We all know how that works. And these people hadn't been able to run in the state of Arizona since March. And, you know, so they're just sitting on their horses, and some are going out of state. But, you know, some of the Arizona breds can compete in other venues, but a lot of them just, you know, they're just not good enough. And so they're stuck in this spot. If they're not running Arizona bred races at the venue in Arizona, they're kind of in a really bad situation.
Hmm. Well, it comes to me. I was watching from afar, and we were in contact. You know, while I was at Keeneland, and was pleased that this came off. And I wanted to give you a chance to, you know, to let everybody know, and you know, the proper acknowledgments for making this happen. The other thing that continues to be pending, however, that came up in the, you know, the final approvals, speaking of the Arizona Department of Racing, bring everybody up to date on the simulcast contract and the agreement. Monarch seemingly ready to turn the signal back on for their tracks, which of course includes the Stronach group, as well as Del Mar and a couple of others. But I understand that may be up for argument yet as well.
To listen to at the commission meetings, to listen to the oral arguments the other day from both sides of the fence. What basically is Monarch's position has been now is that they'll offer Arizona Downs a signal, but they've got to have their own pool. It can't be commingled with any other of the pools. Which I got up in the commission meeting and it was virtual, so I basically said, hey. The Monarch signal is good for the horsemen, and it's good for the bettors, and it is good for the bettors. The bettors,
sure.
As far as I'm concerned, and we've talked about this before, Steve, they support the industry. They're the ones that drive the industry, and to keep them from seeing certain products is just so wrong. And so I'm a big supporter of they should be able to bet on any races they want to throughout the country. And but Monarch came with the position that they'll offer Arizona Downs a signal, but they have to have their own pool, which to me is disastrous, Steve, because imagine if you were a bettor and you walked into an OTB and you walked into an Arizona Downs and you bet $100 to win on a horse, and their pool was like $1,000. So they throw up the prices and it says $10 to win at Santa Anita, and then all of a sudden the guy goes to the window and he gets $580. It just seems like it's we're going down the wrong road.
Why? What's the rationale? I saw Matt Hegarty's piece, and Scott DeRudy didn't comment. Why would Arizona Downs facilities be segregated?
I don't know. It just baffles me, Steve. I just can't. I don't have an answer to that question unless it's just bad, hard feelings or spite. But it's not good for the betting public, which all companies that distribute the signals should be concerned about. And as far as concerned, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean. Right now, I would say that Turf Paradise is probably operating around 25 OTBs, give or take a couple, based on the COVID issue. And Arizona Downs has probably got 5 or 6. And so I don't understand what the issue is. I really don't. But it just it's something that is somebody that plays the races. I couldn't go to an Arizona Downs OTB and comfortably bet. Think about if you were... going to put a pick six in for Gulfstream Park, and you walked in there, man.
No, you're not. No, it's not. It doesn't work. Period. What from your from the way you interpret the commission, the racing department in Arizona, how will they how can they either rectify it to make things work, or how do you think they'll, because they say Arizona Downs, from what Matt wrote, the Arizona Downs will appeal this or try to, do they have the tools to block it from being executed in the rest of the OTBs around the state?
Well, I will tell you this, that, and I'll give you the Reader's Digest version to make it easy, but the listening to the oral arguments, the law was written in the state that everybody had to be distributed the signal. If one got it, they all got it. But there was nothing in the law that said that the pool had to be commingled or not commingled. So they used that as their, I don't know, point of contention that they're offering, and so their position is going to be, well, we're offering the signal. It doesn't say anything in the law about being in the same pool. So that's what the argument is on their side. But I don't understand, probably like you don't understand, what's the basis of the argument? What's the, why isn't Turf Paradise's pool not commingled? I mean, it just seems like it just seems grossly unfair. But that's, I'm on the outside looking in. Like I told the Author brothers that own Arizona Downs, I'm not the one that wrote the law. I'm not the one that enforces the law. I represent the horsemen, and my situation is to represent the horsemen the best I can. But when you ask me about the signal and not going into not being able to put it into the Gulfstream or the Santa Anita pool, it doesn't make any sense to me.
So while this is, I guess, tabled until, a December meeting?
Well, unless they have a December meeting, unless they have an emergency meeting, but the commission basically decided the other day that it would be okay to go ahead and have two separate pools. Because I think what they drew the conclusion was there was nothing in the law that said they had to be commingled pools. So, and that's they've got the Attorney General's office at their disposal to ask them about their opinion, and so that's what they came up with. So I do think that Turf Paradise's OTBs are going to be able to show the Monarch signals going in their OTB system.
Turf, as it happens, I mean, things right now are limited anyway. Turf Paradise has 55 OTB outlets throughout the state, but actually just 36 are operating right now because of, I suppose, local county restrictions and how the pandemic response is being managed in those markets. And how many OTBs does Arizona Downs operate?
I think it's five or six.
Wow. So they're really being
squeezed,
excluded. Yeah. There, and what's the status of what's the status in Prescott about racing? Are they for 2021?
You know, I heard they're going to ask for racing dates to go through May through September, and we'll wait to see. To touch on that point too, we don't know if Turf Paradise is going to race in October of 2021. That's one of the things that I'm not privileged to knowing as far as what Mr. Sims's business plans are, but that's up in the air. So. I would say as of May that until we know if we can get some kind of legislation passed as far as to help the horse industry, but the sessions in Arizona have been put on halt until January. So there's a lot of things that are questions that can't be answered right now just because, the COVID-19,
sure.
the issue with the permittees, But I guess the one positive to look at is we are going to run through the first week of May, and we're going to have decent purses. So I guess I'll have to look at you know, what we're going to do going forward when we get this meet started. But, you know, there's a lot of things, Steve, that aren't answered yet, you know.
Well, the good news, though, is that for the horsemen that were hoping to winter in Phoenix, they're going to be able to do it. And that's a tribute to everybody that was involved. And I suppose some of the maintenance concerns were addressed as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're
good. Good.
Mr. Gessman walked the backside the other day and said that it was looking pretty good.
Nice. Well, Bob Button, well done. Arizona HBPA and Turf Paradise. So at least the first almost half of the year, some answers, and we'll wait about the OTB. Bob, thanks for the update.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Bob Hutton, everybody. And overall, seemingly good news. That signal situation's got to be smoothed out. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Thanks to Mary Hartman and Chuck Andre for paying tribute to Frank Generazio. Carrie Fromer for Dr. Johnson. And more. Andy Serling, Bob Hutton. Back tomorrow for the Wednesday edition. And got plenty to do. Didn't get to some things today, but that's all right. We got another 3 hours tomorrow. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. And, of course, at the website, little archive action and podcast and so forth. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Casey. Talk to you in the morning. I'm on my way to Vermont. Got to get that Thanksgiving birthday haircut. Talk to you tomorrow.
The
latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place.